Hi, I'm Leanne Jackson, senior law editor at Forbes, and today I am joined by professor of national security law, Claire Finkelstein, at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. She's also the faculty director of the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law. And what's important to know about Professor Finkelstein is that she filed an amicus brief in the immunity case involving President Trump that the former President Trump, that the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on yesterday. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Professor Finkelstein, to give us a little bit more of your thoughts and analysis about how the oral arguments went and what direction you think this is going to take and the impact on the underlying case here.
Well, thanks so much, Leanne. It's a pleasure to join you. This is the most significant immunity case that the Supreme Court has heard yet. There aren't a lot of cases, but there are a few very famous cases, like U.S. v. Nixon, on whether or not President Nixon had to turn over the Watergate tapes, or Clinton v. Jones, about whether or not President Clinton had to testify to a jury in the sexual harassment suit by Paula Jones. And then we had Trump v. Vance about whether or not Cy Vance could subpoena Trump's former accountants for his personal financial records. But this is really the ultimate in immunity cases, because here a former president is claiming that in any matter whatsoever, not in a particular circumstance, not in some kind of minor temporary setting, but across the board and in every case, a president is above the law and cannot be convicted of a crime. And that is such a sweeping claim that if the Supreme Court were to agree with former President Trump, our democracy would literally come crashing down about our ears. So it is really an incredibly important case.
So would you take us through what the process was to get to the Supreme Court? The trial court ruled against this idea, this concept that President Trump, former President Trump, would have sweeping immunity. And were you surprised that the Supreme Court agreed to take up the issue?
I was surprised because when the D.C. Circuit, a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit, also ruled against President Trump and issued a very long, very detailed opinion, really running through every possible issue, as well as a number of now famous hypotheticals involving a president taking out a hit by ordering SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival and so on. It seemed as though the DC Circuit had left no stone unturned. So why did the Supreme Court take this case? And what will happen now? Those are the really big questions. And the oral arguments this morning leave me a little bit concerned, not because I think that the Supreme Court is going to side with Trump. That was pretty clear. It's not going to happen, and it would go completely against the precedent that we have in those other cases I mentioned involving other presidents, as well as Donald Trump himself in an earlier case, a 2020 case called Trump v. Vance. But it worried me because the court seemed to get very hung up on the distinction between official capacity and personal capacity action. And then there was some suggestion that they might have to remand the case to Tanya Chutkan, the trial court judge, to try to distinguish what is personal capacity and what is official capacity action here. And that could further delay the start of trial in the January 6th case against Donald Trump till at least November, if not later. And that, of course, would be too late for the American public to know whether or not Donald Trump is guilty of all the things that special counsel has charged him with in connection with the January 6th insurrection.
Now, you mentioned that it was important that these issues get decided, whether it's official capacity or personal capacity, the fact that the Supreme Court took up the issue, even though, as you mentioned, it was very detailed, the determination by the appellate court. But there are some observers and analysts who say this is a win for Donald Trump no matter what, because it has delayed the trial. And even if it does get pushed back to the district court judge and she again rules against his side, that there is sort of a benefit, there's been a win for him in terms of the election. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you'll remember that Jack Smith, special counsel, had asked the Supreme Court on an accelerated timetable to take up this case and deal with the immunity issue back in the fall, and the Supreme Court declined to do that. And then to turn around and take up the case after the DC Circuit has rendered its decision, it does kind of make it look like the court is going out of its way to delay matters. And I certainly don't think all nine justices had any such motive, but one does wonder about the motive of some of the justices on the court. And it's very concerning to me that this matter would end up delaying the trial and as well as dovetailing so tightly with the timetable for the election. It's very disturbing to think of an election happening in November alongside the beginning, possible beginning of a trial in the January 6th matter. Because, first of all, as a matter of justice, no criminal trial ought to be mixed in with politics. Justice ought to be blind with regard to electoral politics. And second of all, it will really be used in the election and weaponized, as they say, by former President Trump, I assume. I don't see President Biden weaponizing this trial. He's been staying far away from it. But I fear that it will be weaponized by former President Trump on the campaign trail, and it could really up the ante in terms of the level of rhetoric and possible violence that we all have reason to be concerned about in the wake of the last January 6th when there was violence.
Well, and so you did file an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief on this immunity issue. I believe you said it was 2022. What year did you
No,
is that?
in this just a few weeks ago, in the
Thank you.
run-up to this case, Richard Painter and I, along with 13 national security professionals, so the brief is called Brief of Claire Finkelstein and 14 national security professionals, that's counting Richard, filed an amicus brief to address the national security implications of the immunity issue. And what we argued was that for the commander in chief to be immune to criminal prosecution for official capacity acts, let alone, of course, personal capacity acts, would be a have a terrible impact on order and discipline in the armed services, because every individual in the chain of command has an obligation to follow the orders of the president. Now, if an order is patently illegal, however, then those in the chain of command must refuse to follow. In general, however, if an order comes from the commander in chief, it comes with a heavy presumption of legality. But if individuals in the chain of command know that the president is immune to prosecution, and therefore they know that the president is above the law, they won't know whether or not the orders are illegal or illegal. So suppose, for example, that a president issued an emergency order to suspend elections, right? Saying that is too dangerous because our adversaries are targeting polling places. Of course, there was a threat of suspending elections, and in some cases, there were some delays in elections around COVID. There might be some rare instances where it is legitimate to suspend elections. Most of the time, it's not. But suppose he were suspending elections to seize power, right? Or suppose he were ordering troops to go and seize voting machines, as supposedly he considered doing in December of 2020. The military, or suppose the SEAL Team 6 example, where he ordered the military to assassinate a political rival. Should those orders be carried out or not? The point that we made in the brief is that you could really throw the chain of command into deep confusion and undermine discipline and order in the ranks by giving immunity to the commander in chief. And that is a national security disaster as far as our preparedness to deal with all sorts of dangers to the US is concerned.
So the Supreme Court had, can you talk a little bit about which justices were really trying to thread the needle between what is official capacity and personal capacity, and what do you think they were getting at with that in terms of the actions on January 6th?
So what really concerned me was that both the liberal and the conservative justices seemed to buy into this distinction between official capacity and personal capacity acts. There is some basis for that distinction, but it's really much more in the civil realm. So it is clear that government officials have a certain degree of immunity when it comes to civil liability for official capacity acts. But in my view, that really doesn't carry over to criminal liability. And here we're talking about criminal liability. So they spent a lot of time trying to figure out what things are criminal and what things are civil, and seemed almost at times to accept that there could be immunity for official capacity acts, but just laid stress on the idea that a lot of the acts involved in the January 6th context might not be official capacity, might be personal capacity. Now, however important that distinction might be in the civil arena, I don't think it's an important distinction in the criminal arena. Because there can't be any immunity for official capacity crimes. There is no such thing as an official capacity crime. So
You think
instead of
crime is crime. Crime is
crime
crime.
is crime. So the president doesn't get a pass for committing crimes and saying, I did it as president. It's different in the civil arena. And so, what the court should be saying is this distinction doesn't matter. The president doesn't get to violate the law, period. He doesn't get to contravene federal criminal statutes like the obstruction statute or murder, which might be involved in the SEAL Team 6 example. And so it really doesn't matter. And it doesn't have to go on remand down to the district court because Tanya Chutkan doesn't have to figure out what's official capacity and what's personal capacity here. All she has to do, and this can already be done at this stage, is say there is no immunity for any criminal acts committed by any president. And now the trial can begin, and a jury can figure out whether or not former President Trump has committed criminal acts. It's very straightforward, it's very simple, and this is really a red herring to try to figure out what acts are personal and what official.
Yeah, so it kind of muddies the waters to some extent, but really, as you said, it's more of seems like a potentially going in circles type of discussion and argument. And just last question, I mean, you already said you believe that this probably will be, bumped back down to Judge Chutkan at the district court level. What How long do you think that might take, though, the Supreme Court final question to actually make a determination on what the
Yeah,
remedy
I don't
is?
want to say it probably will be bumped down. It's my fear it might be, and there was a hint of that today. But if it is bumped back down on remand, it could take quite a while. I mean, Tanya Chutkan is a terrific judge. I'm sure she'll be efficient, but all of that takes some time, and it also depends where in the term this court decides this case, renders its decision and releases its opinion,
Yeah, that's
that could
when do you
take
think
some
that, yeah, when do you
time.
think they're going to release a decision
Yeah,
on
I
that?
mean, suppose they release it deep into August, right? And then it doesn't get to Judge Chutkan until sometime in September. We really could be talking about a trial that doesn't start till November. That wouldn't be hard. And so that I think is really an outcome that I would hope this court would want to avoid because it puts the trial on a collision course with the election. And that in itself, I believe, given what we saw on January 6, 2021, is a national security risk in and of itself. I mean, we had an insurrection and people committing seditious conspiracy, breaking into our Capitol building. Do the justices really want to risk that kind of reoccurrence with this case?
Well, this case is just one in a number that he is dealing with right now, and we'll see how those play out in terms of the timeline as well. But Professor Finkelstein, I really appreciate your time because you gave really insightful analysis on the immunity issue and the Supreme Court's arguments on this. So I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Leanne.